Recorded live in downtown Newtown, this is Rancho Notorious, a podcast about movies and other cool stuff. You can find this and all the other episodes of the show at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious. Welcome everybody to season 2 episode, I think it's 14 of Rancho Notorious. My name is Dan Slevin and here with me in Wellington, New Zealand, Kaylee Carruthers.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Hi.
Welcome back to us both.
Yeah, it's good to be back on the ranch.
It is home on the range with the deer and the antelope play.
Yeah. It's been so long, Dan. I've missed you.
Well, I've missed us, yeah. and I should probably explain that, you know, we decided a little while ago that we were going to take the show fortnightly because of everybody's workload and actually the sheer expense of putting the show on, to be honest, bearing in mind the catering budget and all of that. And then somebody got sick and we put it off for a week and then we wanted to get it back into the... Anyway, cut a long story short, it's been 3 weeks since we last did this.
It has. That's what happens when you have, like, real lives.
Tell me that.
Well, not really real lives, like, almost real lives. Where, you know, you work very long hours and you get sick and you can't get better.
Yeah, and, I mean, and my plan for this is, for those of you that listen on a regular basis and maybe check the website, is that I also do a fortnightly slot on Radio New Zealand, a little 10-minute film review, potted film review thing, and I thought, oh, rather than just repeat the same jokes on a day, you know, on the same day, maybe what I'd do is repeat those jokes a week later on Rancho Notorious and people wouldn't notice so much, right? So I figured that what we would do is we would always have Rancho on the off weeks from Radio New Zealand. So that's the theory behind it. Anyway, that whole thing has gone completely to buggery. And Kaylee, are you right there?
Oh, here we go. Okay. So just having some technical difficulties.
Yeah, we have so much equipment here in at Rancho Notorious: headphones, cables, microphones, mixing desks. There's a inkjet printer where no inkjet printer was before. Sorry about that.
That's where my wine used to go. Oh, the feng shui's off.
All I can do is apologise. At least we waited until the sun had disappeared and wasn't actually baking us inside.
Yeah, but you know what? It's great to be back. It's great to be back on the Rancho couch, home on the range. There's going to be a beautiful warm dinner after this with lots of Easter treats.
Oh my goodness! Yes, this is the last piece of official business before the long weekend.
Yeah, doesn't even feel like business though. It's just like hang out and talk about movies.
Yeah, no, true enough.
And there's lots to talk about this week. Well,
there's an enormous amount to talk about, and not only that, this is the very first edition of Rancho Notorious, and if we add the previous podcast that we choose not to name, where we've gone into it without a script, because I have no idea what we're doing.
No, it's going to be good.
Been so busy, and there's been so much to talk about.
We're just totally brain dead. We're just like, let's just freeform.
Yeah, freeform. Oh my god, and no guests either.
No guests.
So
no one to rein us.
For those of you that
brace yourselves.
Yeah, for those of you that only listen for the other voices. Mm. Sorry. Mm. It's just the two of us. But we have had a big 3 weeks, haven't we? Mm. So we'll get to that. There's a lot to talk about. In no particular order. I can't preview it because I might forget what we're gonna once we get into it. Anyway, what we normally do at around about this point, I remember this without needing a script, is Kaylee has a look inside the mailbag.
Yes.
And runs away.
Yes. So going all the way back to our previous episode, just after recording, Chris Horman tweeted us, "Thanks so much to Rancho Podcast crew for having me over tonight. Dan Slevin, Kaylee and NZ, Karen and Ian, 2-word review, fantastic hosts."
I tell you what, he was a good guest as well.
He was great. Yeah. He was great. Which also sparked a little bit of conversation with one of our favorite tweeters from, well, in general, but also from the Christmas episode, Siobhan Leachman, Siobhan said, listening to the 13th of March episode, Welly Film Society need a Twitter account. Great for introverts. And they do have a Twitter account.
Yeah, we were able to bring those happy people together. Yep.
Yes, yes. And she also tweeted, worst sentence, time to wrap the show up. No.
And actually, I mean, it's probably the worst sentence because whenever I say that, it usually means there's another 20 minutes to go.
Because you'll be trying to wrap up the show and then I'll just like start talking about something.
No, it's usually me actually. But anyway, we're both equally. Yes. Responsible for that.
Yes. Marie O'Sullivan tweeted, Reese Pie, good friend of ours, a tour review for Xavier Dolan's Mommy, Shouty Sweary.
I get a feeling that that film's not going to get a cinema release in New Zealand.
His films don't make it here. I Killed My Mother did with the festival, and we haven't seen anything
He made a film called I Killed My Mother and another film called Mommy.
Yes.
He's obsessed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He maybe needs to get out more.
Yes. And, of course, our mailbag, as usual, is always full with amazing tour reviews from Fred Thompson. I do not know how this person does it. But let's start with a movie I'm definitely not going to go see. Tour review, Get Hard, Soft Croc, Relentless Barrage of Juvenile Jokes with Lazy Cartoonish Stereotypes, Too Stupid to be Offensive.
I tried to get somebody on the show today to... help us review Get Hard. I haven't seen it, but I was looking for a Get Hard correspondent and couldn't find one who was prepared to come on the show.
There you go. Two-word review also from Fred Thompson. Two-word review for X plus Y or X and Y. Compelling formula. Wonderful tale of self-acceptance and social integration. Hawkins and Butterfield are fantastic.
Hmm.
There you go.
Another film I haven't seen. Thank God for Fred Thompson. Yes. That's all I have to say.
And Miriam Ruth Ross, who we haven't heard from for a while, but is still our 3D expert, I feel.
Wow, she's got a book out. Did you see that? She has her book on 3D film is out, and I think that we have to have her and Mauro here on Rancho Notorious.
And then do a book giveaway.
Rancho Notorious. Yeah, if her publisher will allow her. But we should definitely
Can't we just buy a copy and give it away?
Oh, yeah, why not?
Let's just blow the budget.
Exactly. So I haven't actually been in contact with her, so she's listening now, and I fully intend to be in touch to get you on the show.
Yes. And Miriam Ruthera said, the Vatican Museum's 3D, stunning art. It's the cinematic equivalent of an exquisite coffee table book.
It did look like it would be pretty damn fantastic. Yeah.
What else? Oh, one that I'm... title I'm not familiar with, so hopefully someone does know, but again, I've been in a French film festival bubble, so I don't really know what's going on in the rest of the world.
A Bublé,
yes, thank you. That would be the French-Canadian film festival. Still waiting for the High Commission to fund that one. Two-word review, Run All Night. Mucho machismo. Predictable but held together by solid cast, brutal action scenes, and stylish visuals.
That's Liam Neeson. That's like Taken 3.5.
I haven't heard of this. Aww.
Yeah, Liam Neeson, gruff, Irish.
Yes. So anyway, before I give too much away, that is our selected mailbag for the week. If you'd like
for the
to
3 weeks.
Yes, if you'd like to see more, listen to the rest of the show until I tell you what our Twitter handle is.
Entrapment. Yeah, that's right. You have to wait until the bitter end. Mm. So this is a podcast about movies and other cool stuff. Mm-hmm. And there will be other cool stuff mentioned later on. But it's time to check out the box office for the last weekend, the 4 days leading up to Monday.
Yes.
In New Zealand.
Thank goodness.
Moldy Land.
Thank goodness. It is still in Helvetica.
Mm.
Okay. In at number 5, the second best exotic Marigold Hotel, all the way down from 3. Opening at number 4, Get Hard.
Not number 1. Interesting.
Mm-mm-mm.
Will Ferrell, maybe the... Because that was... It was actually made a lot of money in the US, so maybe the Will Ferrell and Kevin Hart magic.
Mm. Not convinced.
Wearing off.
In at 3, down from 2, Home, which looks really cute because there's a cat on the poster, so
it
I'm
does
in.
Look cute. Interesting that this, like a lot of the international releases for Home... Like, it opened maybe a couple of weeks before the US, and yet it also opened a couple of weeks before the school holidays in New Zealand. Like, you'd think that they would have, I don't know, Weird. Don't understand it. Never have done.
Mm. In at number two, down from the number one position, is Insurgent.
Right.
And in at the number one position, Cinderella.
Okie dokie. So, bearing in mind that we have no script and we have no structure and we might forget to do it otherwise, maybe we should do Insurgent now.
What does Janine think is in that box, Caleb?
I don't know, but she's testing Divergence. Searching for the one who can open it.
Find them. Every last one of them.
Janine's never gonna stop coming after us. It's time we fight back.
We don't have the numbers.
We will.
Dark times call for extreme measures. Let's begin.
I'm not gonna fight you.
Of course you're not. You're gonna fight you.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen it.
I have seen it. Yeah. You saw it as well.
Yeah, I did. And did you see the one before?
I did see the one before, which right, is which why is I called... really I wanted to make sure I went to see Insurgent. Which Divergent yeah. was the first film.
Mm.
Insurgent is the second one, and then there will be a third one as well.
But they could keep going. It's called this. This is the thing. It's called the Divergent series. They don't even have a lid on how many there are going to be. It's not like the trilogy or
they could keep going. There's only three books. Published. Well, four books, because then there's a... I looked this up on Wikipedia.
Right.
There's a fourth book where the trilogy is retold from the point of view of four.
Stop it.
Yeah. So it's like the dude version, I guess.
You know, that. I mean, they're still... I mean, What's-His-Face is still writing Game of Thrones. And and so why would they ever stop? You know, I mean... As long as the books are coming out before the movies, you're sweet, aren't you?
Mm,
what's the third one going to be called? Detergent?
No. I can't remember.
Emergent?
It starts with an A.
Aspergent.
Let's go with aspergent. Because we're terrible people.
Anyway, but it's not just going to be the third. I mean, it's going to go on because it's still making money, right? And and I imagine everybody involved in it's on really low contracts, right? Because they were not big stars when they were signed on, right? It's a bit like Jennifer Lawrence with X-Men, you know, like she's trying to get out of the X-Men as fast as she can. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's a saga.
It is.
Mm.
It is.
So maybe I'm gonna ask you to do the heavy lifting of plot summary because I did this on 9 to noon last week and then promptly completely forgot the names of all the cliques, the sects, the houses, what are they called? The factotum, what?
A faction. Karen just hollered at us.
You know what I want to do? This is my next plan, right? Because Karen doesn't like sitting here in the studio with us because there's so much to be done outside preparing for the dinner afterwards. But what I might do is I'm going to buy a radio mic so that she can just like interrupt from the other room whenever she feels like with like facts that we don't have.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is most of what we don't have is facts. So, okay, what did she say?
Factions.
Factions.
Factions. Yes. Factions, yes. So, not districts, but factions.
Yeah.
So this is the second part of a trilogy or however, who knows how long it goes on. It starts right away with our main character, Triss, played by Shailene Woodley, who I could just watch in anything because she's so adorable.
And people who watch proper movies will remember her from The Descendants. She was George Clooney's stroppy teenage daughter in The Descendants.
And she was also in that teenage drama.
Oh, the one about the alcoholic with Theme Belt from Whiplash. This is how people who are just discovering the show
with Miles Teller, who's also in Insurgent. This is the weird thing. It's like Miles Teller and Ansel Elgort are both in Insurgent, and they've also been in other movies with Shailene, where they play her.
The Fault in Our Stars. Thank you.
That was with Ansel Elgort.
Yeah.
Where they play couples, and then in this film they're sort of like. Like Ansel Elgort and Shailene Woodley are brother and sister, so that makes the world of Fault in Our Stars a bit creepy.
Not that. Can I just say that while I really admire Hollywood's commitment to people's real names now, that there was something kind of nice about the days when people changed their names to Rock and Clint, and that Ansel Elgort doesn't seem like to me the most movie star name in the world.
No, but I believe his father is a photographer, so he has like the first name of Ansel Adams, right, yeah, and then his father's last name. So it's very,
that's beautiful. It's beautiful for them.
Yes. So anyway, it starts right away. When the film started, I sort of wished I'd watched the last 20 minutes of the first one, so I knew what was going on and remembered who these people were.
We cheated because we watched the first one 2 days before we watched the second.
Oh, see, I should have done that.
And you know what happens, right? It's only 5 days apart. 5 days in film time,
yeah,
between the end of one and the beginning of the next, but they all look like they spent that entire 5 days in the gym.
Oh yeah,
man, they like, yeah, she's in a singlet basically the entire time. She they all look like they've just done nothing but work out for that 5 days where they were on the run.
They probably did. Mm. So it starts right away. Triss is on the run from Janine, Kate Winslet's character, and the rest of the power-hungry erudites.
Erudites.
Yep. Sorry.
Americans, get your pronunciation together, please.
Oh, God. And she and her allies are searching for answers in the ruins of Chicago, my favorite American city.
But I think that of all of the ruined cities that we've had in recent movie going, this is the most effective. Like, it really does feel like a ruined city, and it also at the same time still feels like Chicago. You know, I like to, you know, in moments when I drifted off, which is not uncommon during the film, I like to imagine that this was the result of that Transformers battle.
Oh yeah,
you know, that the war that they're talking about that they don't, nobody mentions, yes, was actually the Transformers.
Yes. So the big theme of this film is what's in the box.
Yeah.
Because they're
There is a box.
There's a box.
Yeah.
And Janine, Kate Winslet's character, believes that the only one who can unlock this mysterious box is Triss.
And there's a message inside.
Yes. From the creators of their land and, mm, you know, in the box?
Yeah, the people who decide, because the thing is that they didn't just invent this idea that everybody would be in these different factions. Somebody told them,
yes,
that they should be in these
much
factions.
Much like The Giver.
Wow.
And Hunger Games.
Yeah.
but it's still intriguing. Mm. I love young adult science fiction. I find it very intriguing. I love reading it. I haven't read these books.
You should start writing it, because that's where the money is.
Oh, no. Oh, no. No, thank you. There's already enough happening. But the thing I really appreciate, in comparison to the other similar films at this time, is that Triss's character is actually, she's kind of great. Like, she isn't worried about which boy she should go with. You know, she's concerned about...
Well, no, because she's decided.
Yeah, well, yeah, which, you know, makes it a bit easier. But she's just, like, doing her thing, you know? She's just going for it. Yeah. And it's nice not to have these annoying, like, distractions when it's like, okay, there's this huge war going on. What boy do I choose? She's like,
that's right. No, you're right. That whole, I like him, but he likes me, and I like his best friend.
You don't, none of that. She's like, I like this dude.
Yeah.
He's great.
With the tattoos of the wings.
Yeah. Those are some serious,
with the strange,
those are some serious Sharpie tattoos they have going on there.
Named after a number.
Yeah, which was confusing, because in some synopses it's like lover 4, and I was like, oh, that's a bit
gross,
demeaning.
Yeah.
Just like numbering, and I was like, oh no, that's his character's name. Sorry. So yeah, I mean, it's not amazing or life changing in any way, but it's entertaining. There's good performances from all the actors except for Naomi Watts. I found her kind of blah. But I don't really find her terribly
Kate
fantastic.
I think Kate Winslet looked really, really uncomfortable throughout.
Did you see? Her outfits were so tight. Of course she was uncomfortable.
Well, and in the first film she was pregnant as well, so they were really tight.
But yeah, I when at the no spoilers, but at the end of the film, I thought it was over. I was like, I had to go look and see. I was like, I'm sure this is a trilogy. I'm sure there's another one coming out. But a friend of mine also, I think she tweeted or mentioned on Facebook that she's like, I don't remember any of this happening in the book. So now I feel like I have to go back and read the book, because I don't know how much it sort of has strayed from its original material. Like, maybe they are pushing it in a different direction and they're going to carry it beyond the source material.
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
I know. Well, I have a holiday now. I can read.
Yeah.
I have four days.
I can read! So, there we go. Insurgent.
Won't change your life, but it will entertain you. Maybe.
Yeah, I thought that the look of the thing worked really well. I mean, it's very soap opera-y. It is basically just a big allegory for high school. And once you can get past that, it's not bad. Shailene Woodley is an interesting actress. I thought she only really had two modes in this film, which was like crying and running. She's a very good crier, so I can see why you would want to maximize that as a director. But like the middle, if this is indeed the middle, like the middle of any trilogy, it's like character-wise, it's treading water. Like it's moved some plot on, and at least now they're looking beyond the fence, which is.
I did notice though, it's like if you're a parent planning to take your child along. And your child hasn't read the books, I'm not so sure, because it did feel incredibly violent for a young adult film.
Yeah, no, I thought that the first one was probably okay for sort of, and parents will obviously be able to pitch this at their own kids' levels, and it's very different for different kids, but I would have thought that the first one was more like an 8 to 13, and this one would be more like an 11 to 14.
Yeah,
you know, for those of you who have kids, maybe that's not a helpful thing, but it skews slightly older, I think, and it's punchy. And you know,
there's like some pretty scary moments,
and also which a trend which I do find frustrating at times is that this is a film where most of the problems are solved by punchy, right?
They're not shooting.
Yeah, punchy or shooty. And it's not as if, you know, like I love film, and we'll come to this in a little bit later on. But yeah, I want more films where problems are solved by intelligence and solving puzzles or bringing people together or whatever. But this is just about who punches hardest in some ways. Mm. Or, you know, anyway, maybe that's not all that fair, because there is a bit of strategy involved in all of it. But the third one comes out, yeah, I'm intrigued now. I want to know how it finishes. So
if it finishes
now,
we don't know
exactly. It's got me. Two words.
What next?
Yeah. Oh, well done. So mine would be crying and punching. Okay, so that's our two words there. Now number one in New Zealand, Cinderella. Only one of us has seen it, so this is going
to
be a quickie.
Yes, sorry, I had the flu this week. Unfortunately, I was not able to binge watch as much as I could.
I want to tell you a secret that will see you through all the trials that life can offer. Have courage and be kind.
Wouldn't you prefer to eat when all the work is done, Ella?
Yes, stepmother.
Oh, you needn't call me that. Madam will do.
Cinder wench. Dirty Ella. Cinderella.
It would be an insult to take you to the palace dressed in these old rags.
You shall not go to the ball.
So this week, the three of us in this household went to see Cinderella. We'd heard good things. Graham Tuckett, friend of the show, gave it a great review in the Don Post on Fairfax. And, you know, Cinderella... Is there anything new? You know, like, is there anything new that you can do with this story? And, like, why? Why would you do it? And then you watch it. Kenneth Branagh directed it. It's written by Chris Weitz, who I think wrote and directed About a Boy, I think. I'm looking him up on on the internet, if I spelt things correctly, it would be faster. Right, so he directed about a boy, and what are we doing here? The second Twilight film, The Golden Compass, but also wrote American Pie, one of the writers on American Pie. But he's
even though I groan, it is iconic. So
yeah, but he's this is really well written. You know, this is a really good telling of a story that we all know the beginning, middle, and end of, except that they add that Cinderella gets a backstory, right? So you get a kind of first act / prologue, which puts you in where the story normally starts. And so you understand where she's come from, and you understand what she's lost, and what... We were interested to compare it to Into the Woods, which has the Cinderella story. And Into the Woods we obviously adore because of Sondheim and the music and what have you, but in terms of the Cinderella story and really getting under the skin, making these people, it does a really fantastic job. It also is beautiful. It's almost immaculate to look at. The costumes are absolutely sensational. The detailing of it, every single costume, even the extras, has been made, not just rented. And the art direction, we were just in awe of the look of the thing first and foremost. And then we felt like it tells a great story, it has a fantastic message about recovery from bad situations, from abusive situations, and a positive, forgiveness is a very difficult concept to get across in movies, Liam Neeson wouldn't stand for it, right?
Liam Neeson does not forgive and forget.
No, exactly. And so it's really nice to see a film that almost insists upon it, So, look, I tell you what, I reckon this is going to be a classic. This is going to be...
Really?
Yeah, this is going to be a film that that kids should watch, families should watch together. It's really, really well done. And Branagh knows how to direct actors, and so they're good. I mean, it's primarily you can't imagine this being ever done outside of a studio. Like, this is only Disney could do this, and I give thanks for it. We enjoyed it an enormous amount, and although we in our party, the 12-year-old boy thought it was a little long. If we had a 12-year-old girl in our party, I'm sure she would have thought it was, not long enough. But I really appreciated it. And so my two-word review for Cinderella is it's beautiful.
There you go.
Cool. I'm going to throw over to you now to do the Australian thing, but you're not going to be able to do it until I turn the light on, because the sun's disappeared and now we have no... Now we're all sitting here in the dark.
Oh, there we go. Okay. So in at number 5, down from 4, Focus. That's the...
Australia, right?
Oh, yes, this is Australia. Mm-hmm. In at number 4, all the way down from 2, is Home. In at number 3, down from 1, Get Hard.
Have you seen Focus, by the way?
No. No, thank you.
Oh, no, it's all right. And
is it all right?
No, it's not all right. But the reason why I bring it up, and maybe this is the time to jump in on this one, is that half of the film is set in Buenos Aires in Argentina.
Here we go.
And I don't know if people know about this, but... This is going to be the...
This is the new Telluride.
Yeah, I spent 4 days in Buenos Aires in the gap between shows, in the hiatus that we just had. And Should we do this now?
Yes. This is a great segue.
Yeah, because this is a show not just about movies but about other cool stuff, and Buenos Aires counts as cool stuff, I'm afraid. Yeah. So, in case you didn't know, Buenos Aires, the autonomous city capital of Argentina, there is a state of Buenos Aires of which the city is not part. It's like Washington, D.C. Oh. It has its own thing, independent. And like a lot of like Wellington in New Zealand, it is built on sort of reclaimed land. It's a port city. Unlike Wellington, it's not hemmed in by hillsides. It's actually hemmed in by flat pampas, right? Mm. And it is an amazing city because it is like Madrid or Paris. It's built to resemble one of the great European cities, but it is also slightly down on its luck. You know, that Argentina has had a parade of dictatorships or strongman leaderships, economic collapses, to the extent where it looks a little bit sort of rough around the edges. We had a tour around the presidential palace where Eva Perón once made speeches to the public. Still, the building on the Plaza de Mayo where the president works on a day-to-day basis, right? So every Sunday it's open to the public for people to tour around. And we were looking around going, the paint's peeling. You know, looking up at the ceiling and like, oh, really? And but it's got this incredible 19th and early 20th century grandeur that's slightly fallen on hard times. What did we do? What did we not do?
Did you go to a cinema?
No. Ugh. No, unfortunately not. In fact, for long periods of the trip, the reason why we went was because in New Zealand in December will commence direct flights from Auckland to Buenos Aires. Mm. And at the moment, if you're a Kiwi or somebody who lives in New Zealand, and in fact for a lot of Australia as well, if you want to get to Latin America, South America, you have to go via the South American airline and you have to go via Santiago, Chile. And which is how we did it. It was Wellington, Auckland, Auckland, Santiago, Santiago, Buenos Aires. And in fact, the plane that we picked up in Auckland had come from Sydney, so it was like half full already with people from, can you imagine, Sydney, Auckland, Auckland, Santiago, and then from Santiago off to wherever else in South America you need to go. Hard work, right? So, but from December, New Zealanders at least will be able to go direct to Buenos Aires. It's a huge airport. You can get connections to the rest of Argentina and on to Brazil, Sao Paulo, Rio, whatever. But Buenos Aires itself as a destination is pretty cool. So Air New Zealand basically shouted a whole lot of media, including myself, somebody from the Otago Daily Times, the New Zealand Herald, the Sydney Morning Herald, and as a group we were shuttled around in this minibus to go and do touristy things. I wished we'd had more time to have free time to just wander, and I would love to go back to be able to do that, but on this trip, we were very much on a time constrained thing. So we went to see the cemetery where Evita is buried, which was fascinating. We got the tour of the presidential palace, and we got to see the cathedral where the current pope was once archbishop. They're very proud of that. His picture is on buses as they go past.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, they're very, very proud of the fact that there's an Argentinian pope at the moment. We went to see a football match. So now I'm an official fan of Argentinos Juniors.
Good choice.
Argentinos. And it was a fantastic, fantastic experience. We were told there are no – football hooliganism is still very much a big problem in Argentina, so there are no – away fans allowed to games, so it's just home fans only. We were told the team that we're going to watch wears red and white, so and do not wear yellow or blue. Do not wear yellow or blue under no circumstances, because that's Boca Juniors, their big rival. So I put my Phoenix shirt away. Wasn't going to be able to wear that. But extraordinary experience. We ate an enormous amount of meat, like vast amount. The beef is they're so proud, and there's an enormous amount of it. And I don't think, apologies in advance to our vegetarian and vegan listeners, but until a steak has come out to you and it is being carved with a spoon, you have no idea what meat can be like.
I cannot wait until December. I know where I'm going.
It is, oh my goodness, it was just, it was incredible. And we learnt tango. We had tango lessons, and we went to a tango party. And so now I get that, and I'm very keen to pursue that pastime a little bit more.
Sure, there are plenty of opportunities here in Wellington.
I know, but I was scornful. I knew that they did it, but until I actually had a go at it, we were taught by an Irishman, funnily enough, a great story in itself, and. Once you do it, it's like, oh, right, I get this. Because I'm not the most comfortable person in his own skin that you've ever met in the world. So dancing is a thing that I just don't do. Like I'm an observer, I'm a wallflower, right? But once...
Yeah, Ian doesn't dance either. He's like really anti-dancing.
There's another reason.
Until a certain point in the night, and then you just got to get out of it.
And then you can't stop him.
Yeah, well, I love dancing. Like, the first chance I can get on the dance floor, I will be there. Like...
Well, get him to Buenos Aires.
I know,
and get him doing tango lessons, because once you realize
that, I can hear him shaking his head in the other room. Like, no,
it will happen, right? So we did tango lessons, but the highlight of the entire 4 days, like this, it took like a day and a half to get there and a day and a half back, and we had 4 days there. Was an hour and a half's drive out of Buenos Aires. We drove to a polo club and learnt how, and for me, it was like learn how to ride a horse and learn how to swing a polo mallet.
This is like you, like peak bourgeois British.
You
played polo.
We were the 1% for a day.
Wow.
It was.
What's it like playing polo?
Well,
do you feel...
I just assumed beforehand that polo was a completely random thing, that you just rode around like a mad bugger and swung the thing randomly, and it might hit the ball or it might not. That's how I play. The real players, it's a real skill to it. So we actually spent like an hour before we were allowed on a horse. We spent an hour standing on a chair in the field with a mallet learning... learning forehand and backhand and the 360 over the, and a wonderful guy who had played polo for Argentina called Julio, who was the sort of club captain here. This was an incredible place. Like, it was a polo club out in the country on the Pampas, which is flat as you would not believe. Like, Argentina is flat until it stops being flat, and the most incredible sky, this endless horizon. And this place had like six polo fields and a 10-room hotel and a beautiful place for him and his family to live. We met his 2-year-old, Julito, aww, who's riding horses already. Like, this is, you know, oh, adorable. And the clubhouse, which has... balcony, so you can see two of the polo fields from there. I mean, a huge, huge space. They've only like got 300 members. So this isn't just the 1%. This is like the quarter of a 1% at the very top. Because he was telling me, he was saying, "Oh, if you're serious about polo, you shouldn't even start unless you can afford 4 ponies. Right? You need 4 ponies because a chukka." Is 10 minutes. There are 4 chukkas in a game. And you ride these horses really, really hard and for at least 1 chukka, and then they have to go and rest, right? And you have to get between chakras, you get on another horse and you just go hard out. It's thunderous when they're really, really going for it. And four is the minimum. You have to be able to swap. And he said, if you're really serious, you've got like 16 ponies.
What?
Right? And so you have to,
where do you keep 16 ponies?
Well, there were hundreds on this pony farm, right? There were hundreds there, right? All looked after, all paid for as part of your membership fees of the club, right?
Do they have like little braided manes?
No, they have no manes. They shave their manes off.
Oh, that's cruel.
No, they cut their manes off because they get in the way.
Yeah, but not if they're like nicely braided.
No, I think that might just be a little bit too girly. Maybe. There are girls. Oh, this is an interesting thing about polo is that it's not, there's no men's polo and women's polo. It's like,
it's mixed.
It's mixed, totally, right? Because it's all about the horses, right? So after our hour on the chairs, we then get to ride a horse. Now, I have only ever done like little bits of pony trekking before on really sad looking mangy animals, right? And so I was a bit worried about this. But what they do is that when polo ponies are bred, they can sort of tell quite relatively early on whether they're going to be full on sports ponies or whether they're going to be kind of a little bit more docile and a little bit more, you know, better for training or for tourism.
Fan ponies.
Yeah, or for tourism, right? So, they've got these ponies that that basically will just go where you point them, but not very fast. So, you trot out. No, we don't trot. You walk out to the pony field, to the polo field, and there's about eight of us. We're not expected to play a game, right? So it's just there's a lot of balls, there's a few cones, there's mallets and ponies, and all we do is we just hit a ball, go after it, and then try and hit it somewhere else just to get a sense of how it works. In the afternoon, of course, we're going to play a game, right? And these ponies were just so beautifully well behaved. They weren't completely unscary. They were gorgeous looking things, and they would go where you pointed them. But in fact, if anything, they were so docile, they were so well behaved that they sort of stopped just at the moment you needed them to take another step forward. And so your timing of your mallet would be all buggered. But that was fun. And then it was like lunch, 2 hour lunch, barbecue. You know,
more meat.
Beautiful, more meat, more meat. Sweetbreads. Never had sweetbreads before. Never tried sweet. And it's like, ooh, like. They gave us one glass of their own branded red wine,
obviously.
Their own Malbec, right? No more than that because you know you're going to be on a horse later on with a mallet. And so there was that, and then we go out and we play a game, and Julio divided us up, girls versus boys. He played on the girls' team, and on a half a polo field because otherwise we would never have finished, right? And I don't think I have laughed as much, and I'm pretty sure everybody else in this group, the guy from the New Zealand Herald, the woman from the Sydney Morning Herald, I don't think any of us have laughed as much as that ever. It was hysterical, and. You know what my number one lesson was? That when it comes to scoring goals in polo, it doesn't matter how the ball gets over the line. Your horse can kick it over the line and it's still a goal.
Yes.
Which means I have scored a goal in polo.
Yes!
That is one of those achievements that I cannot be... You know, like no one can take away from me now.
Well done. Well done, Nan.
It was, oh my God, it was just like a great day. I cannot, I've been trying to find out from Air New Zealand what that day would have cost, like a citizen to, you know, if you were just going to go and hire it out for the day, and I haven't heard back. I'm terrified that I'm recommending this incredible experience, and then people are just going to go, well, I have to mortgage my house now.
You Thanks, Dan.
But it was, oh my God, and it really was a how the other half, how the 1%, how the quarter of 1% live, because Julio was saying things like, yes, the members, they come out here and they, you know, they will spend a day, you know, they'll play, they'll eat, etc., and then somebody will sell them another pony, and that's 300,000 pesos there, you know, and it's like, really? They just buy them like that? And 300,000 pesos? Here's an interesting thing about Argentina, right? Their economy has been so completely banged up by previous governments and by international economic stresses and bad decision-making and what have you, that anywhere I've traveled, I've never experienced this, but basically they have two prices, right? So they have the peso price and they have the dollar price. And the exchange rate when we were there was like 8.5 pesos to the dollar. But if you have actual dollars, it's more like 12. So, you know, they want US dollars. And this is a country it's sort of like on the ground level, they're sort of behaving still like a third world country. We're like, well, you know, we'll do a deal, don't, not a word to the tax man, whatever. But it does mean there are bargains to be had if you make sure you carry both currencies. And, you know, we ask how much and they look at you and you go, dollars, pesos, what, you know, what did you take? Who knows what happens to the whether they ever report the dollar sales. God, I don't know. But yeah, it was there was so much about that trip which was just absolutely fascinating, and I apologize to all of our movie loving listeners that I've just hijacked the show for that. But
get out of the cinema, get some sun.
Yeah, it was.
Go to the Buenos Aires Film Festival, I'm sure there is one.
Scorchio was, you know, it was warm, it was not, and it was not like Kuala Lumpur last year. It wasn't a sort of heavy heat. It was it was really nice. It was right by the coast, right by the Atlantic Ocean, and it was cannot express how what a cool place it was. And if we'd had a bit more time, if I was to go back, I would do 2 weeks, and I would do a week of Buenos Aires, and then a week using the railway to go out to the to other parts of Argentina, because it's an enormous country, right? Like, it's humongous, and Buenos Aires is just this one little urban nub, but there's incredible other parts of it, you know, Patagonia and what have you, that I'm sure are worth seeing, and you'd be able to use it as a base. So, yeah, cannot recommend highly enough. And I'm sure my friends in New Zealand will be really happy if I tell you that their flights, that when we were there, they hadn't announced the prices. And apparently from December, it's $8.99 one way, NZ dollars.
No way.
Yeah, it's doable, eh?
Whoa.
It's doable.
That's totally doable.
Yeah.
For those of us, you know, who can save our money.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah, and if you get a few US dollars, they'll go a long way too when you're there.
Mm.
Right. So right. Anyway,
so money.
Okay. Now the reason why that segue happened is because we were talking about Focus, the Will Smith movie,
right?
Which was half filmed in Buenos Aires,
right?
And there is one, at least one. I need to watch it again to make sure that there aren't more. But there's at least one sequence there in a place where I went.
There you go. Yeah. So that's why I felt like an insurgent. I was like, I've been there, but you know, in the past.
Yep.
Well. current time and past. Anyway, back to the Australian box office as I ramble on. Number 4, down from 2, Home. 3, down from 1, Get Hard. In the number 2 position, Insurgent. And in the number 1 position in Australia, Cinderella.
All right. I'll do the United States of...
North America?
The United States of North America, exactly. Where are we? Number 5. 1, 2, 3. Because I've cut the numbers off on this. Okay, number 5. It Follows, a horror movie, and that's coming out in New Zealand very soon. I actually had to skip a screening of that this week, and I'm very, very unhappy about that. Cinderella at number 4. Insurgent at number 3. Get Hard at number 2. And Home, which we've spoken about, at number 1.
And in the UK, not much difference. Although, in at number 5... The Divergent series, Insurgent.
Oh, the full... This is the British Film Institute for you, the pedants.
4, Get Hard. 3, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water.
Which 3D, opens this week here.
Yes, the 3D version, no less. In at number 2, Home. And in the number 1 position, Cinderella.
Mm-hmm. So...
Yes.
Now we can start the show, 51 minutes in. I just got a text from Karen outside going, dinner time? Maybe. Look, I'll tell you what, there is one thing that I did want to talk about that isn't us talking, right, which, you know, is wonderful for us and for fans of us, but, we like to think that this is more of a magazine show. We usually have guests, etc. Last night I was invited by TVNZ to the launch of the new Pukeko Pictures /ITV production of Thunderbirds Are Go, right, which is the remake / reimagining of the beloved marionette TV show from the 60s, 50 years ago.
International Rescue, we have a situation. Thunderbirds are go.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Thunderbirds are go.
Those of us that are big fans of the original obviously had some trepidation because there was a feature film made of it recently which was pretty dire and, you know, basically was not respectful enough of our memories. So we went out to Park Road Post in Miramar to, Park Road Post where the screening was, but Pukeko Pictures are right across the road from there, so we got to see the studio where they have been shooting the film. And you may ask, shooting? Isn't everything done by computers these days? Well, the interesting aspect of Thunderbirds and the way that they've approached this is that in order to keep the sort of original DNA of the show alive, what they're doing is they're shooting model and miniature backgrounds. So they're building sets. They are building real sets and real locations and real models for almost everything, and then they're shooting those, and then what they're doing is they're sending that over to other parts of Wellington and Taiwan to animate characters over the top, right? It's incredible. And so we got to have a look around all of that stuff, and Kaylee, I will show you some of the photos later on, and I'll put some of those on in the show notes for tonight. And then we got to sit and watch the first two episodes of the new show. And I know that it seems like it's a long way away from what Rancho Notorious is supposed to be about, but actually other cool stuff, what could be cooler than Thunderbirds, right? And this is a TV show that is going to be, in fact, it's actually, it has to be pitched at like 3 to 8 year olds. It's not pitched at adults. It's not pitched at people who used to know the show. And in fact, there are incredible restrictions on what you can do in a show that's aimed at kids now, and certainly in British television, right? So there's no violence, there's no guns, there's no, you know, like there are a lot of things that you cannot do. And so from a story point of view, they've made 26 episodes already, and they've been commissioned for another series. So to continue to create stories that are about these characters, set in this world, that don't resort to the usual sort of punchiness that television is all about. So in lots of parts of the world, I'm sure it'll just play as after school entertainment. In New Zealand, from the 12th of April, it's going to be on Sunday nights at 7 p.m. Like, that's about as family prime time as you can get. The Andrew Shaw from TVNZ was there, and they are very, very excited about this. And then the lights went down, and we got to see the thing. And I have to say, as a massive fan of Thunderbirds, I almost cried just at the opening, just at the opening credits, because of the respect that they have for the original, but at the same time, the bringing it into the modern world. I recorded some of the Q&A with Sir Richard Taylor and the director of the show and the chief executive of Pukeko Pictures, who was there. So hopefully, I haven't listened to it back yet, so I might have to cut this bit out if it turns out the audio is no good. But there was here's about 5 minutes of Richard Taylor and his team talking about this Thunderbird show and why it's so important to them.
So I guess, you know, I've got to ask you the first obvious question for me, which is, you know, was it a shower moment? Was it a kitchen moment? Where were you and what were you doing when you suddenly thought, I'll bring it back?
Well, I think it was probably when I was 4 years old and I thought, I've got to watch this for the rest of my life. It was actually 12 years ago, and we'd always wanted to see more of the Thunderbirds. There just wasn't enough episodes made originally, and we've always lamented that there wasn't more amazing escapade of these incredible brothers. And we started talking about what would be the next show that we wanted to do, and we thought, well, why not? Why not give it a go? So we flew to the UK, we met with Gerry Anderson, got his blessing, met with Sylvia Anderson, and everything was very, very positive. We were working with Carlton to try and get a new imagining of the Thunderbirds going, but sadly Carlton got bought out, and all the people we were in conversation with moved on. It was 10 years later when I was sitting with Martin, Andrew and Tanya, and we were saying to each other, well, what's next? We've done these other shows through Pukeko Pictures, and what's next? And Thunderbirds had kept coming up again and again, and Andrew said, well, do you know, I think if I go full on at this, if I get over to England, if I start shaking this down, something may come of this. And it was indeed Andrew that actually went and seeked out the right people at ITV that had the power to make the decisions around whether Thunderbirds could ever relive again on television. And thankfully, one day, after much effort, he came home with the good news. You can only imagine the reactions in the workshop as we almost lost it. So it was wonderful.
Yeah, it was interesting because you know, we'd been chasing the project, as Richard said, for 12 years, and I go over to the UK every year for MIPCOM, and each year I pop into ITV and I'd say, hey, you know that Thunderbird show? What about it? And every year they'd say to me, yeah, we want to make it, and they'd nod, you know, happily at me. And then it was in June 2012 where I basically got a phone call from Giles Ridge, who's one of the executive producers, and he said to me, well, you know how you've been coming over here for the last 8 years and asking us about this show? We're serious now and we are going to make this show, and what we want you guys to do is put together a proposal for us and how you would remake the Thunderbirds. So I said to Theo Bainton, who's one of the directors on the show, I said to him, look, we've got to come up with something completely different that nobody else would think of. And that's when we sort of concocted this plan along with Richard about making miniatures just in the style that they made the original show, bringing in sort of the best of the new CGI characters with the animation and really, you know, sort of upping the design and characters so they could do some really cool stuff. And we pitched that idea to ITV, and fortunately they went, wow, this is exactly the sort of passion that we're looking for from people. And they said, you know, you guys are going to make this with us.
And a lot of people won't know that you weren't actually the only guys wanting to do this, right? You were highly competitive.
That's right. This show was thrown out to Canada, the UK, Australia, and us here in New Zealand. All the sort of English-speaking territories that have traditionally been the home of Thunderbirds. And, you know, that's why I said, look, you know, this is a real competition and we have to win this show. Because we've been chasing it for 10 years. This is the thing that's really going to set us apart from our competition. So.
As Thunderbird 3 flies over. David, you're a boy from the hut.
Yes.
You know, so your story is fascinating. I'd just like to know, when you were asked to take on the directorial responsibilities for this, you know, was that an oh-shit moment?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, since I was a kid, you know, I mean, when it was broadcast, you know, late 70s, early 80s, it's been incredibly inspirational and, you know, probably much like everybody in the workshop, a pretty key show that inspired me to become an artist and all that kind of stuff. I mean, when you saw it as a kid, you could kind of tell that it was made by real people, handmade. You could tell that the painting on the ship, the line work, it was all hand painted. So in many ways, it kind of let you think that maybe you could do that at home, you know. So in my case, you know, I used to get the back of Weet-Bix packs and, you know, make up a Thunderbird 3 and, you know, paint it up. And, you know, and if I went out to the garden and did a bit of model making with the, you know, in the garden, you know, maybe it might look like Tracy Island, that sort of thing. So, yeah, incredibly inspirational.
Take something that, you know, is so embedded in people's consciousness, something like this. It obviously has had a huge impact on you. You know, you wouldn't choose to take on such a big project like this unless it had some true meaning. What do you think's acutely special about the Tracy family and the Thunderbirds idea?
For me, and I got this even at a very young age, it had huge resonance on me and has stuck with me through my whole life, is that this family do it and they do it incredibly well, putting themselves in incredible danger. Jeff puts his sons at great risk every day for the rescuing of people that they don't know in their lives, and then return back to their island. And ultimately, that's about uncelebrated heroism, something that barely ever happens in the world, and something that today in modern day television is rarely acknowledged or celebrated. So much of today is that 5 minutes of fame, where people are desperately seeking their moment in the sun, and this incredible and extraordinary family achieving mind-boggling things every day for the betterment of the human race, only to then squirrel back to the island and disappear into the shadows, never expecting any back-patting or celebration. And that was fundamental in my belief in these characters, and it stuck with me all these years, and it's now fundamental in the show that we're all making.
And in terms of the people that are making it here on the ground, it's a true international, because you've got sound being done in the UK.
Well, the combination of things, we've got, we're doing all the digital modelling, all the design, all the model making and all the shooting here in New Zealand. We do all of our digital animation in Taiwan. We do all of our voice recording, all of the orchestration, and all of the post in the UK, and we do the writing primarily in the US, but using writers from other places around the world. So a very complex show that Andrew had to knit together at a production level along with his team, and very, very challenging. Also, we of course then had to find the crew, and something that's often missed is the incredible employment that something like this can bring to somewhere like Wellington. There's so many young people pouring out of animation schools around New Zealand that may otherwise need to go overseas to seek employment in their chosen career. And a show like this can offer such a rich and opportunist possibility for them. And of course, no more so than giving David back. David was actually working with me on Lord of the Rings all those years ago, and we had lamented the fact that we had lost him overseas because it just wasn't enough to entice him and keep him here. He needed to pursue his career overseas. But this was the show that brought him back, and all, you know, so thankful that he chose to join us.
In that, do you think, have you tried to stay religiously true to all the characters in the original?
Well, I think in terms of the design, it was really important that a father would be able to sit down with his kid and recognise all the key characters, you know. There's been some changes to the suits themselves. They no longer have sort of the Miss Universe sashes and things, but it's interesting how when we actually did a bit of research, we found that what we thought was actually quite a decorative thing could actually be something quite functional. Like, we looked at all these police rescue sort of videos and footage and things, and they all had these big sort of, you know, packs on.
Yeah, the SWAT team.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
Structures
so,
on their bodies.
So we thought, well, okay, rather than, you know, remove the sash, let's actually make it a functional piece of the rescue equipment. So every sort of decision we've made like that has mainly been, if we've made a change, we've made it because basically the world itself has changed, you know, in the last 50 years.
Well, that's a point that's been touched on because, you know, it was commented on about, you know, the space race was in full flight when Jerry did it. And now the space race is, you know, it's Cappuccinoville, isn't it? You know, if you're not going to space, you're just unlucky right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, in the original, it was very exciting to have a character that went into space at all. You know, Underground 3 was very exciting for that reason, but it wasn't really designed to take into consideration the kinds of risky scenarios we have now. So one of the things we did early on as part of our design process is we imagined very specific rescue situations, and we sort of played them out. You know, what if the International Space Station came down over London or New York? What kind of gear would they need? What kind of functionality would Thunderbird 3 have? And the only constraint we placed on ourselves was that we wanted to keep the basic silhouettes exactly the same. You know, we still wanted to have the three struts on Thunderbird 3. Okay, but if it's got to grab a satellite, well, maybe it needs some arms, you know. So all the changes we made came out of that very, very logical breaking down of what a rescue scenario needed to be.
So there we go. That's Thunderbird Go. Going to be appearing on New Zealand television very soon, and I'm sure all over the rest of the world. We have, as a prize, for listeners to Rancho Notorious, a very limited edition embroidered Thunderbird 3 patch.
What?
For you?
No, there's one less. I want one. No, I'm just kidding. You're guessing.
You have to enter the competition, Kaylee, and you have to take your chances like everybody else, right? And so for you to sew it onto your school bag or whatever.
Oh, so cool.
Right? It is fantastic. So basically what we want is to hear from you is your personal experience of Thunderbirds, your favourite characters, why it means something to you. If you need it, more than 140 characters, you can email us. Leave a comment on the website, etc., which leads us back into wrapping the show up.
Yes.
Now, can you do this without a script? Because I can't.
I think I can do my bit without a script.
After 3.5 years. So, and it's my bit, right. Okay, and that is our show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. If you've enjoyed this episode, you can subscribe to us at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious, where you'll find a way to communicate with us via email or make a comment.
You can find us on Twitter with our Twitter handle @RanchoPodcast. That's RANCHO podcast, all one word, where we'll be tweeting incessantly about things we think are interesting. You can also find us on Letterboxd with lots of hilarious quotes, thanks to the wonderful Reese Pie.
Bless you.
Yeah. Our...
She makes us seem like we're much, much cooler than we actually are.
What's our letterbox? Is it Rancho Notorious?
Yes, it is, yeah.
Yes!
Capital R, capital N. And the show that you've just heard is a Funerals and Snakes production. Season 2 is executive produced by Robert Catto, Random Films, Claire Corray, Mark Cuby, Anthony S. Pratt, Fred Thompson and Matthew Buchanan. The theme music is Ennio Morricone's The Good, The Bad and The Ugly by Los Plantronics, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. We're going to play you out with some more music, and in a Thunderbirds frame of mind. This isn't music from the new series. This is me going all retro, and it's a fantastic novelty record. I'm not going to play this underneath us, actually, because you need to hear the whole thing. This is called Parker Well Done, featuring Lady Penelope and Parker and the cast of the original. Now, get this. The original Parker is the voice of Parker in the new one.
What?
He's still alive.
That is the power of Richard Taylor.
Oh yeah, well he told this fantastic story. I might include this in the clip that we play. But he tells this story about how the very first Lord of the Rings premiere in London, his wife Tanya was pregnant and couldn't travel, and he needed a date, and he was so obsessed by Thunderbirds that he invited Sylvia Anderson, who he'd never met before, who was Gerry Anderson's wife, who was the voice of Lady Penelope, who he had a bit of a thing for, who was 71 at the time, apparently, and asked her out of the blue if she would accompany him to the Lord of the Rings premiere. She, not knowing who he was, thought that it was a good idea, but thought she should probably be accompanied by her daughter. And apparently he and her daughter have maintained a fantastic friendship ever since. Like, this is not a purely commercial arrangement. You can tell from the love that everybody has for this thing, that this is about a personal journey that they've all been on since they were earlier than 5 years old, you know. And so, yeah, very cute. Get this. Lady Penelope, fantastic casting. Can you guess who's playing Lady Penelope? Mm. Rosamund Pike.
What?
Yeah. Gone Girl is the voice of Lady Penelope. And apparently she's so into it, she's even helping choose costumes, like digital costumes for her character. She's going, no, she wouldn't wear that. Awesome. It's just, I was like, poof, mind blown. So, I mean, I cannot, the 12th of April, it's going to show up on New Zealand television.
All right, Richard Taylor, if you're listening, please come on our show. Please bring Rosamund Pike with you. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Let's have a party.
So there we go. We're going to send you off with Parker Well Done. Thanks to everybody who's contributed to the show. Thanks very much to Karen and Ian. Outside, who
and Sebastian.
And Sebastian as well, and who are going to entertain us once the red light of the show goes out. Good night to everybody. See you again in a fortnight.
Yeah, see you again soon.
You rag, milady?
Yes, Parker. Oh, Parker.
Yes, milady.
I think I'd like to take a little ride. And Parker?
Yes, m'lady?
Somewhere just around the countryside. Have you prepared the Rolls Royce? Is it ready for a run?
Oh, yes, m'lady. Quite all right. Everything's been done. I've lubricated all the cannon and I've polished up the gun.
Oh, Parker. Well done. International Rescue, a Lady Penelope speaking.
Hi there, Penny. Jeff here. We've got a hot one for you.
Ready and waiting, Jeff. May I have details?
Sure thing, Penny. A foreign agent has managed to steal the small but very vital neutronic stabilizer unit out of Thunderbird 2. From information just received from the FBI through your Scotland Yard, he's proceeding down your motorway M4 after landing at London Airport. We need your help, Penny. Car is Black Saloon, make unknown. Registration number HPJ960C. Repeat, HPJ960C. Can you take care of it?
Yes, Jeff. Leave it to me.
You rang, m'lady?
Cancel the countryside run, Parker. We've just been called to an urgent assignment. Get out the Rolls Royce.
It's all ready and waiting at the door, m'lady.
Very good, Parker.
Parker.
The vehicle in question is now just ahead, m'lady.
Very good, Parker.
Now, m'lady?
Now, Parker.
Home, m'lady?
Home, Parker. Oh, Parker.
Yes, m'lady?
You'll have to clean the guns again, I fear. And Parker?
Yes, m'lady?
I'm sorry to have messed up all your gear.
That's quite all right, m'lady. It's not as bad as it appears. I've got a few more jobs to do, so don't have any fears. I've got to fuel the gas bombs yet and sharpen up the spears.
Oh, Parker. Well done. Oh, Parker.
Yes, m'lady.
Well done.